N-Y-Y-S-T.
Hold up, why do they doubt the kid? I'm about to prove them all wrong again. I got a low tolerance, cause they don't even know where their problem is. It's me. You waiting on the boy to fail, then hold your breath and face your death. Cause you play a roulette with each step I progress, no less. Go ahead and place your bets. Cause we know where we at, we know we top tier. Cause all the hate that you bring, we know it stops here. I'm taking off like a rocketeer and stopping here. It's strange how they cannot see the future, but see profit here. Wait up.
Welcome back. This is episode 529 of the NYYST podcast. We're presented by NYY Underground. I'm your host, Christian, and alongside me is my co-host, Chris.
You.
What's up, bro?
What up, man?
So I was sending you the link to Zoom here, and it's been exactly 8 weeks since your last appearance on
NYYST
podcast.
Seriously?
Dan.
It's been that long?
8 weeks.
That's fucked up, man. I skipped a month. But that was like my busy month. Now things start to
slow. I would have thought this was your busy month, but here you are.
Here we are.
Here you are.
Good slipping.
So we're here. It's a Monday night. The Yankees are enjoying an off day before they start a series with the Cleveland Guardians tomorrow night. You'll hear this on Tuesday morning later this evening. At Yankee Stadium, as they start off another homestand. They had a pretty good road trip here. They went 5-1. What do we even say about the AL Central anymore when it comes to the Yankees? If the Yankees lose a game against the AL Central, I mean, you should start an investigation as to what happened. They did exactly what they needed to do against the Royals, and then they go out to Sacramento and they take 2 out of 3. Really, you could have said they probably should have swept on that series. You know, Ryan Weathers, if you really want to touch on anything from the series, did you have a problem? I kind of did. I thought Weathers was cooked. I know what Boone's idea was in that situation going against a lefty, but it is Nick Kurtz, and it kind of where the game got away from the Yankees. They did mount a little bit of a rally in the ninth inning. He was over 100 pitches. You know,
I questioned it at the time. But I also wasn't against it. So if I'm not firmly against it and then it goes wrong, I'm not going to sit here and, you know, criticize the move at that point, especially with this bullpen, which has been better of late.
Well, not yesterday.
Not yesterday, of course, but I mean in closer games. I didn't like the move. I definitely didn't like the move. I was kind of shocked. And then I like stepped away from my TV for a second and came back and saw that, what was it at the time when, what was the score? Was it 3-1 at that point? And I was just like, I thought that was going to be it for him. And then I kind of walked away. I had to do something, came back, and I saw the replay.
It was 12 o'clock in the morning, bro. What the hell are you doing?
I don't know. Probably one of my kids was still up.
Probably lying. Or you weren't even watching the game.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, okay. Says the guy who definitely falls asleep and then sets his alarm to wake up towards the end of the game to post the results because you stopped texting.
No, I 100% mid-game. Fell asleep on Friday. I'm not going to lie about that. I did. Yeah. Well, you know what?
So I came back in my room.
Try living my life, bro.
Yeah. Listen. I came back in my room. I see the replay of the home run, and I was shocked to see it was Weathers still out there. I thought that was going to be it for him. But again, I don't think they win that game anyway.
3-1 is different than 5-1.
Yeah, sure. I mean, then they had a comeback. What, 6-4?
Well, after they didn't score, I'll be honest. Well, after they didn't score in the eighth, I turned the game off. I was like, I'm not even going to bother. And then I woke up and I saw it was 6-4, and they were just drawing. What did they just draw, like 40 walks in that inning?
Yeah. I think they got 3 RBIs on just walks. And who was the final out? Jazz?
It was Jazz.
Yeah, I would have literally bet my entire life. He actually had a much better at bat than I thought he would have had in that situation. I thought he was going to go down in 3 swings. But I would have bet my life that the game was over at that point.
I just got so frustrated because Saturday was such a weird day. Like, I woke up and I said, I literally have nothing to do. Like, when's the last time I woke up and I had nothing to do on a Saturday? So I did a whole bunch of shit. I got to 8 o'clock and I was like, there's still 2 hours before the friggin' Yankees play.
Yeah.
And then I watched Scream 7. Okay.
Okay.
I didn't hate it. I know people
Okay.
hate it. I didn't hate it. Okay.
Okay.
Not the best Scream. Not a terrible movie.
Okay.
Okay. And then they immediately fell behind. What, you know, that's the thing about Weathers is that he gets bit by the home run ball. That's where we've seen some of his worst outings come is when he's given up a bunch of home runs. So I think that's something he's going to have to work on. But he is a fast, you know, he likes to live off his fastball and he's a strikeout pitcher. Those guys are going to give up home runs. Overall, though, he's been really good for the Yankees this year. I think he's going to ultimately be a guy that's going to come up huge for them down the stretch and into October as a bullpen piece because they definitely need help in the bullpen. Because then you go to yesterday's game, which was such a weird game. I've never really witnessed a game like that before, where the Yankees scored 13 runs, 10 coming before they even recorded an out, which tied a major league record. And they were up 13 to 3. And then it's like the seventh inning, whenever it was. Boone's pulling some of his stars. Judge came out of the game. I said, you know what? Let me go take the dog for a walk, get some exercise in. I come back in the living room just to see that
And it's 13-8.
13-8. I said, what the hell is going on over here? And then, you know, reading through the box score, I guess Timmy Hill got smacked around. And that's the thing with Tim Hill. Like, we love Tim Hill. Tim Hill has a definitive role in his team. You just don't want to overexpose Tim Hill. And I think the Yankees were trying to do that. And then Fernando Cruz gave up a run. And then, God forbid, David Bednar ever makes anything easy on
I
himself
know.
or anybody else. But he got through it. The Yankees won. And then the really what was the weird thing about the game yesterday? The Yankees went 24 up, 24 down in the other 8 innings of the game, but managed to score 13 runs in the third inning, which
Never
I've
saw
never
anything
seen.
like it.
It was wild.
When they went down 3-0, I immediately was just like, they're cooked this
You were
game.
frustrated.
Yeah, because I thought they were going to come out flat. And then all of a sudden, you just look up and it's like, okay, they're getting a rally together. And then I just remember, like, they just kept going and going. And then they hit 10 runs and I looked. And that was like really when I noticed there's still no outs in this inning. Like this, that was one of the most wild offensive innings I've ever seen in my life.
Without any home runs either.
Yeah, it was crazy. And then it was back to sleep after that.
And then Austin Wells didn't even make an out in that inning.
Wow. That's tough to do.
So let's go back to we brought up Ryan Weathers there. I want to get your take on this because I think anybody that's been listening to the show without you on the other end know that I think that Ryan Weathers is going to be the guy they transition into the bullpen at some point this year. I think it's going to be out of necessity because they need a bullpen piece and because Ryan Weathers' innings are going to catch up to him at some point after only throwing 38 last year. Do you think that's his ultimate end game for this season?
Yeah, he's the only guy who profiles to be the guy who transitions over there. Like you said, he has good swing and miss stuff. I think you'll actually see way
I think he still
less.
struck out 10 guys on a Saturday night.
Really?
I gotta
Yeah, I
look that up.
mean.
I mean he's got I think what's gonna happen is I think the fastball is gonna play up. It sits around 94, 95 right now. I think knowing that
You're
he
going to
can
get 2 miles
access.
per hour more on his fastball if he's coming out of the bullpen. Even if it's a multiple inning outing, you'll get 2 miles per hour more out of his fastball. And I think you'll see less of the long ball off of him. I think you'll see him get beat less. He's the only, I think he makes the most sense just on its own, but I also think he's the only guy who profiles as someone who can be effective out of the bullpen, the way they're going to have to use him.
Right, because he's also the change-up slider combination. They're swing and miss pitches too.
Like, I heard you a couple episodes ago make the argument that Will Warren has proven and earned his spot, which I agree, but I also don't Will Warren is just not a guy who transitions.
He doesn't have the stuff.
Into a bullpen guy. It doesn't make sense. Ryan Weathers is a guy who you can make a very fair argument has been really effective as a starter, but he's the only guy at that point that you can really see being effective out of the bullpen, the way the Yankees are going to need, you know, that role to be played out.
I think fans they get on Ryan Weathers every time he gives up a run, and you go on social media and it's like, oh, he's a bum, he sucks. And I'm like, I don't see that. I see this as a guy that's got a lot of talent.
He's got some good stuff, man.
He's got really, really good stuff. Even yet, they were talking about it on the broadcast. You, and I think Cone said this, like, you hate that he gave up that home run to Nick Kurtz because of how good his stuff actually was on Saturday night. And he did strike out 10 guys. He gave up three hits. He gave up six hits. Unfortunately, three of them left the yard. He's still got a 3.52 ERA on the season. He's been really, really good for the Yankees. And I think that's, if you go down the list of trades Brian Cashman's made over the last half a dozen years, this is one of the better ones that he's made.
Yeah, I won't go that far just yet. I think we need to see how he plays out. And I think the Yankees made this move with the exact idea of transitioning him into the bullpen, knowing the kind of depth that they have in this rotation. Obviously, they had to go into this knowing, you know, this is a guy who only threw 38 innings last year. He's going to have to transition over at some point. I'll give it the year to play out before I go that far with the Cashman stuff, but I think this was a classic Cashman move where he saw a diamond in the rough that a lot of other GMs don't see. And you know, Cashman knows the resources he has as far as pitching is concerned. I mean, look at Cam Schlittler for a second. A lot of people don't realize this guy was drafted throwing 89 miles per hour. I mean, if there's one thing the Yankees have a strength of, it's bringing guys over that might struggle in other areas and finding what works for them to make them a more effective pitcher. It doesn't work with everyone. Obviously, there's a mental aspect that can't be coached or managed. But for the most part, the Yankees do a really good job managing, you know, their pitching staff.
Well, with the guy like Cam Schlittler that you brought up now, it's that he has the, as they would say back in the late 90s, the testicular fortitude.
Yeah.
Every time that he's out there on that mound, he just needed the stuff to back it up, and he's obviously got it. And we always talk about this. This is one of the things that you absolutely love about Cam Schlittler. He's not out there messing around. I forget I saw all the stats the other day. He's got like the highest in zone percentage of any pitcher in baseball. He's not out there nibbling. Like, you look at Gerrit Cole. Gerrit Cole is a pitcher.
Yeah.
That's what Gerrit Cole is out there to do. He's got the stuff to beat you, but he also wants to get in your head and finesse you a little bit. At this point in Cam Schlittler's career, I don't feel comfortable really calling him a pitcher because he's just standing out there saying, fuck you, hit this.
Yeah, but I think that's where it starts. I think that's ultimately when you strip Gerrit Cole of everything he does, without that, he is nothing. Without the fuck you, here's my best stuff. You hit it. You beat me. That's what builds it. We talk about a foundation for an ace one day. That's the foundation.
Well, Cole still got that in him, and we saw that in his start against Kansas City. He was, I mean, look, bro, you can say whatever you want. It's two starts. The guy came back from Tommy John surgery. He's had two starts, 12 and two-thirds innings. He hasn't allowed an earned run.
It's been unbelievable. And it hasn't just been, you know, getting some lucky outs and whatever. What do you have, 10 strikeouts?
10 strikeouts against Kansas City.
I mean, Jesus God, man. The guy is... His first outing was really good. His second outing was brilliant to me.
No, he was dominant.
He was just fucking brilliant.
You know what? You know how you know Gerrit Cole is back? And I don't know if you noticed this in his last start. I mean, I've talked about this, but I'll talk about it with you. Is that... The first pitch he throws to Michael Garcia, I think that's who the leadoff batter was. He tried to spot the fastball in the outside corner, and it was a strike. They should have challenged it. They didn't. He doesn't get the call. What's he come back with?
The same pitch.
same pitch.
Yeah.
The same pitch, because that's who he is. He's like, no.
You better give it to me this time, yeah.
It was a little bit more on the plate, but it's the same pitch.
Yep.
I mean, and that's just his attitude out there. He's like, no. You're going to give this to me, and then we're gonna move on from here.
But that's an ace, and an ace knows that the more you continue to hit that spot, the more, whether it's early on in the game or throughout the game, the more you continue to show the umpire you're going to hit your spot and hit that glove, the more likely you are to continue to get that call. And he wasn't going to give up on it.
No, two pitches into the game.
No, yeah, he had to set the tone. It's called setting the tone. And Gerrit Cole, if there's one thing you aren't going to take away from him, I don't care how many surgeries he has, is knowing how to set the tone. That's what an ace does. And he was, I'm telling you, man, his first outing, I was blown away. He came back that strong. I thought he looked great. But his second outing was peak Gerrit Cole. He looked so good. Swing and miss stuff. Could have kept going, in my opinion. And I think in his own opinion. I'm not saying I hate the move to pull him, just because of where we're at right now. But, I mean, Gerrit Cole will be the first to tell you he didn't want to come out of that game when he did.
I didn't have a problem with him getting pulled in the first game. I think he even admitted that he thought he was done at that point. And this time, I don't know. He probably maybe had a little bit more, but I also don't mind it, because if you think about it like this, and this is something I brought up last week, is that on that start against Kansas City really is his first start of the season. He was supposed to still be on a rehab against the Rays.
Yeah.
So you think about it like this, right? The guy needed a start to knock the rust off. That's it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he can come out in his next start and give up a few runs, and I'm sure it's going to happen or whatever, because it's baseball. But I don't know how you look at what Gerrit Cole has done so far through these two starts and not feel confident that this is the guy that you are going to be able to rely on come October.
Yeah. I mean, I never had doubts, but it's very encouraging, just because you don't know what you're going to get after these surgeries. And, you know, you don't want to look too far ahead. You know, we always talk about this window that the Yankees have with Judge and Cole. These surgeries are very risky after the fact. Like, after the first couple years after having them, you know, you don't want to put this out there, but that surgery, while Cole looks great now, could have shaved some years off his career. You don't know. And so that window to me has become even slimmer here. And it's good to see him come back and kind of put all doubts to bed immediately.
Well, you brought up this window here, and I think this is something that we have to talk about. And I'm not there right now. And I don't think anybody should be there right now. But how are you really concerned that we're past the prime of Aaron Judge based on how he's performed in the first 2 months of the season?
No. No. Not. I could it be? Sure. I mean, could we be seeing the decline? It's got to happen sometime.
I mean, this is a fair point. This is a fair time in the season to bring it up, because it's June 1st. We got 2 full months of baseball here. Aaron Judge is hitting .248 with a .908 OPS.
Which is still unbelievable. Not for Aaron Judge. Talk to me after June, and then maybe we can discuss. But I'll say this, and I think it's as simple as this. Guys have off years. The best players in baseball have off years without being talked about, you know, regressing or declining. I know he started his career a little later on than most of the superstars that we see. We're used to seeing, you know, guys come up when they're 21, 22, kind of breaking into the league. But I mean, has anyone performed at the level, consistently when healthy, that Aaron Judge has performed at since he came up in this league. Year after year after year after year.
Well, he has four 50 home run seasons. No one's
ever done five.
And he's still on pace for his fifth.
But I'm talking beyond the home runs. Because if we're just talking home runs right now, this isn't a conversation. Like you just said, he could still easily hit 50 this year. I'm talking overall, Aaron Judge has been an elite hitter year after year. Even the year he got hurt, he was on pace to have an MVP season.
Right, and that's the problem, is he's hitting in the 240s, and the Yankees need more than that out of him.
Yeah, of course. I'm not saying it's great. I'm just saying it could also just be a down year or a down start to a year.
So you look at, I always go back to 2024, because after he struggled in April this year, I said, you know, go look at what happened in April of 2024 when he was really dreadful. And it was like that Milwaukee series that really got him kickstarted. So I went back and I looked. And on June 1st in 2024, Judge was already up to 282, 1067 OPS, and he had hit 21 home runs. So, I'm not there. I don't think my problem is that I think a lot of fans, even Yankee fans, are like praying for the downfall of this guy. And I don't know why, especially if you're a Yankee fan, but the performance that you've gotten out of Aaron Judge this year, 17 home runs, 37 or 38 RBIs, and a 908 OPS. I mean, you'd take 10 of those guys. You would in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
But that's what I always say. What did the Yankees do when he's not Superman anymore? And he has not been Superman this year. And this is where I want to get your opinion on this, because you look at the stats, and we talked about this in the group chat the other night. The Yankees have the fourth most runs scored in Major League Baseball, or they did at that point. Let's look up what it is now. They have the second. I saw this today. They have the second highest team OPS in baseball,
which is stunning to me.
And they've scored 305 runs, which is the best in the American League, and only, which is still fourth, because the Nationals of all teams lead Major League Baseball in runs scored. I was telling you about that the other day.
Yeah.
They have the most. They've scored the most runs in baseball, the Nationals. 324. You want to know what their run differential is?
What?
One. They've scored the most runs and allowed the most runs in baseball, and they're still four games better than the Mets.
Wow.
And they're still nine games behind the Braves. So it's the Braves, Nationals, and Dodgers. So the Yankees, if you look at the numbers, and this is what I tell people all the time, don't tell me what the numbers are, tell me what it looks like. Because if you just look at that, Yankees have the second highest team OPS in baseball, and they scored the fourth most runs in baseball, and they have the best offense in the American League. And then when I called the offense out on social media, I'm the stupid one. But do you feel like those numbers are an accurate portrayal of what you watch on a night-in, night-out basis?
No, because you're watching a team that's extremely streaky right now. So numbers are inflated for sure. They had a span where when they were winning all those games, they weren't just winning. I mean, they were fucking putting the nail in the coffin. It'd be a 4-2 game. And then in the seventh, eighth inning, and then by the time you turned it off, it was, 8-9-2.
Yeah, that stretch they had against, like, Texas.
Yeah.
Baltimore.
And then you saw it again. I mean, the good thing is you're seeing the capabilities of this team. The reason why it doesn't feel, because like you said, if you put aside the stats and you just go off of what you feel, I would never guess in a million years. What was the OPS stat you gave?
Their second highest team OPS in baseball.
I'm so shocked by that. I'm truly blown away by that. Runs scored, I guess, when you really think about it, in the games they've won, a lot of those games they do break out. I feel like the Yankees have lost a lot of close games. But I feel like the games they've won have been, a lot of them have been where they're putting up a shit ton of runs.
Well, if you look at that four-game stretch against Toronto and Tampa where they went 1-3 on the homestand, they scored one run, 0 runs, 2 runs, and 2 runs.
Right. Right.
But then they have these games where they put up 13.
13.
And that. So if you score 13 runs in one game and score 0 in another, and you tell me what the average is, it's 7 and a, it's 6 right. and a half,
six
right?
6 and a half.
And then you go by that, and you're like, oh, wow, look, the Yankees score 6.5 runs a game. That's great. And it's like, okay, well, one game they just completely explode, and then the other game they're like a turtle hiding in a shell. There seems to be no in-between with them sometimes. And I think that's what we're looking at when we look at this offense here, and we say, okay, well, they're a bully offense, and they do things like this where they'll score a bunch of runs against bad teams. So like they did, they beat the shit out of Seve on Friday night, even though he got hurt. And, you know, that's unfortunate. I'm always going to love Seve, man. That sucks seeing him get hurt again. But they put up 8 runs in that game, you know. And then the next night, except if the Oakland Bull, I'm going to call them Oakland, I don't really care. If the Oakland bullpen doesn't walk 40 guys in the ninth inning, they score 1 run. So they go 8-1 and then 13. There's no.
Yeah.
So it's like, I would like a little bit more consistency out of this lineup. And then you look at this lineup, and it's an extremely top heavy lineup. Trent Grisham started to hit a little bit here. And
yeah.
They love throwing this unlucky thing around. Well, he was unlucky. He was unlucky at the beginning of the year. No, I mean, I don't think he's unlucky. I just don't think he's that good of a hitter. Okay, but he's starting to come around. He's had some big games for the Yankees, and Judge, despite his struggles, for him is still a really good offensive player. Great offensive player. You got Ben Rice, you got Cody Bellinger, and then it's like, where are you getting the rest of the contributions from? Well, Jazz Chisholm, like he awakens for a week, and then you can't find him for, and then it's like there's no consistency with Jazz Chisholm. Ryan McMahon is a friggin' lost cause. I think Volpe overall has done a really, really solid job since he's been back here. Cabbie's been really solid all year. And I think if you look at it, Austin Wells is now the new punching boy or whipping boy.
How could he not be?
I mean he's
brutal.
And is that, as we move forward here and we know what we're looking at here, the Yankees need bullpen improvements. So I think I still kind of look at that as the biggest thing that they need to do. And I think they're going to try to handle that internally with guys like Carlos Grande and Ryan Weathers. But if you look around where the Yankees need to improve the most offensively, isn't it catcher?
Yeah. Yeah. Catcher, third base. But third base, I mean, you have so many options now to. If Volpe's going to play even.
And Lombard's starting to hit a little bit now in AAA. Which is kind of his thing, that he doesn't start off really hot when he gets moved up.
Yeah, I think the Yankees have to really start to take that seriously at this point and prioritize a catcher, hopefully a right-handed hitting catcher.
Yeah, Austin Wells is batting 178 with a 570 OPS.
It's so brutal. I mean, it's beyond unbearable at this point. He's an automatic out. He looks terrible at the plate. He's late on fastballs. He's lost on the off speed.
Well, I think they said he's just been in between all season.
He's so bad. It's so bad. But I just want to go back to the point we were talking about with this offense. Obviously, you say, I'm going to say something that like people are going to roll their eyes and say, yeah, duh, of course. But it's something that needs to be addressed with Aaron Judge not being Superman. And with guys like Wells, who are an automatic out, and Trent Grisham, who has been streaky, and Jazz, who is just, I don't know. I just don't know if I'll ever put him on a level that I think he's capable of being, all these different things. When you add them up, McMahon, when he's just a lost cause, there's really one factor that when this guy hits, which he's been for the most part of the season, this offense looks completely different. And that's Ben Rice. The stretch where the Yankees, just came off of where they were losing however many games in a row, It was when Ben Rice came off that injury and really wasn't hitting as well as he had been.
He was named AL Player of the Week this afternoon.
And now he's starting to hit again like he was before the injury. And it just changes the dynamic of this offense, because you still have Aaron Judge, who's a threat, who's having a great, not for his standards, but still having a really good year. And then when all these other guys who are streaky put it together, and then, you know, the holes in the lineup don't seem as big. And it changes the dynamic of this offense.
Do you consider giving Max Schumann more playing time?
Maybe.
I know small sample size. He's batting 294 with a 971 OPS this year.
What positions does he play?
Second, plays
corner. He plays outfield.
Yeah. He'll probably play third base, I would assume.
I don't mind it.
He's listed as a shortstop on MLB's homepage.
I don't mind it. I don't like the carousel. I don't like having a team where one day you have this third baseman, one day this shortstop, one day this second baseman. Here and there, it's fine when you're going to, you know, put guys in there for giving guys days off. I don't like the inconsistency of having a million guys at a million different positions. I think
if you look at your core guys, which are, what would you say the Yankees core guys are right now? It's Rice, Judge, and Bellinger, or would you put somebody else in there?
Rice, Judge, Bellinger. You got to put Cabbie up there, man.
But, okay, you could put Cabbie in there, but he right now it doesn't seem like he has a set position. But the core guys that are, you know, are going to be in the lineup every day.
Oh, yeah.
Or are going to be those three guys. Okay.
Yeah.
Outside of that, with the flexibility that this roster has, and I think that's one good thing that Brian Cashman did here, is there are more options for the Yankees than we've seen in years past.
For sure.
Does it really matter? I mean, if you look at all the numbers of all these guys, they're all kind of like just jumbled in that same area, where, except for like Wells and McMahon, where they're just ass. But they're all these guys' numbers are kind of just like right there. Like Grisham's got a 704 OPS, Cabbie's got a 706 OPS, Volpe's 780, McMahon is 618. So you got these guys there, the numbers are all kind of like right there. I'm almost okay. Like, I agree with lineup consistency, and I agree with that you should have a set lineup unless you want you know, matchups against certain pitchers. But I think this year, outside of those three guys that we talked about, Rice, Judge, and Bellinger, why don't you just play the hot hand?
Play the hot hand, and but if they're hot, like, I got to be honest with you. I really respect the Yankees for the decisions they've made so far this year, but they're kind of making me scratch my head a little bit.
Like, Jazz is another guy, 707 OPS on the year. Like, everybody's got the, like, right there.
My thing with the whole Volpe and Cabbie thing, let's kind of just hone in on this for a second. Tell me if you agree with me. I respect the whole Volpe doesn't earn his spot back and whatnot, but now's the time. If there's ever a time where you can play the hot hand of Volpe, which you aren't going to get for long, he's going to come back down to earth, which he has been slowly, I feel like. Why not play him at short every day and put Cabbie at third? Yeah, but his defense is starting to falter a little bit. His footwork at shortstop is fucking, it's abysmal sometimes. But why not play him at short and Cabbie at third every day until one of them need a day off? Why is it some days Caballero's not playing, some days Volpe's sitting? Why? If Cabbie can play third, why not just play him at third?
No, I don't have a problem with that. And the only thing I think is that the Yankees want to get another lefty bat in there against right-handed pitching. And, you know, they don't want McMahon to go completely stale.
So now we're platooning our shortstop?
They platoon a lot of places. And you got to get...
Name one championship team since 96 that platooned positions like shortstop, third base, second base, every single game.
That 96 team had a lot of interchangeable parts on it.
Well, they weren't expected to do anything that year, and they did. this is a team who's supposed to be a championship caliber team. And I'm not shitting on it. I'm not shitting on the idea at all. I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm just saying it's a slippery slope when we're talking about a team who has been notorious of late going into October and not being able to make the big play, and whose defense who has constantly let them down. And now we're playing a game of Russian roulette of who's going to play where every single day. Maybe right now it's fine, but as we get closer to, you know, end of August into September, I need to know who my shortstop is. I need to know who my third baseman is going to be. And I need to know if Jazz is going to be a legit second baseman for us and start to fucking come through in bigger spots. And I need to know if my catcher can hit over 200. And so that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Look, as of right now, on June 1st, I don't have a problem with the way the Yankees are doing it.
Not at all. I agree.
I think as we do get closer to the postseason and really the stretch run in September, I think decisions will be made of who are the best nine. I don't think you have to make those decisions right now.
No.
The one thing I wanted to ask you, there's two things I want to ask you. So Volpe's hitting .256 with a .780 OPS right now. And I think if those were his numbers at the end of the year, I think we'd all do backflips in the street.
Yeah.
Does Anthony Volpe have the opportunity to ingratiate himself with his fan base, to bring back a little bit of goodwill here if he continues to hit like he's done?
Well, I think Volpe has a lot of things on his side right now.
He's not the worst player on the team right now.
So that's the first thing. The first thing is Austin Wells is doing a fantastic job of becoming the villain. It's hard to rip on Volpe in any way, whether he was playing good or not, when you're playing as bad as Austin Wells has been playing. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, and this is going to be kind of surprising, is Caballero playing really well. And the reason why that's helping Volpe is because our third baseman, Ryan McMahon, who shows you glimpses of what he can do at the plate here and there. But overall, if you can have a lineup with Caballero playing third, or even Rosario,
The thing that scares me about Rosario, he's not good defensively.
Yeah. So if you want to just do the argument with Caballero at this point, you're almost rooting now for Volpe because you like the dynamic of not having Ryan McMahon in the lineup every day, Cabby at third, and you're rooting for Volpe to continue playing the way he is instead of sitting here, and maybe this is just me, and saying, I'm just waiting for Volpe to fucking shit the bed and be a bum and whatever. I'm actively rooting for him to continue down this track. Not that I wouldn't be anyway, because I'm a fan, but in a sense of, I like the idea of not having to play McMahon every day, putting Cobby over there, and I want Volpe to keep doing well, and I'm still just focused on Wells. So there's a lot of factors going into it where, yeah, I think Volpe, and we've seen Volpe come through with some big hits in October, that, you know, he plays the way he's been playing now, and then come October, he's in that lineup and has some big contributions. We're looking at a completely different perspective that fans could have on him.
So I bring this up on social media, and I brought this up on the Bronx of Nowhere on Thursday night. And you look in the chat while we were live on NYYU, or like you look in my comments, and there's still a bunch of people that say, no, fuck him, he sucks, he's always going to be a bum. Okay, but first of all, why are we rooting for that, number one? It goes back to like what I said about it. Why are we rooting for the downfall of Aaron Judge? Or like, why are we rooting for Anthony Volpe to always suck? And number two, like, I think he does have the opportunity, even though you see this section of the fan base, oh, I'm done with him. Well, the Yankees aren't, okay? They brought him back up here, and he's played relatively well. So why don't we see what he's got right now? And I think he's done an admirable job. I'm not saying that. I don't want to get it twisted and anybody think that I'm coming on here and saying, oh, he should be the franchise shortstop, because I've seen enough to know he's not the answer. Does that mean that he can't be the franchise second baseman next year? I don't know. Maybe that's a different conversation that we can have in the offseason. But you look at what the other options are, When you look at Ryan McMahon and the way Josh Chisholm has played, and if Anthony Volpe is going to continue to contribute positively, I think that's a good thing for the Yankees. I think that's a good thing for everybody involved because competition should make guys better. Because think about it like this, Chris. This got taken away from him. You know, they said no more. You know, they love to use this phrase like the, like I think Joel Sherman's the one that loves to use this. He says, no more scholarship. Mm-hmm. The scholarship's been taken away. There's no more free ride here. You got to earn this. And I think he's, I'm not going to say that he's earned a starting position, but he's earned playing time. That is what is what he's definitely done here. And I'm not going to sit here and root against him. I hope he, and I want him to contribute to the Yankees winning because why wouldn't you? I just want to know, like, does he have, I'm not going to say he's ever going to be like a fan favorite here because I think there's a lot of damage that the Yankees did themselves by the way that they pushed this kid down his throats. But I think he has an opportunity here to really show what people, the real Anthony Volpe here. Like, okay, I got knocked down. I had the shoulder surgery. They kept me down there, and I came back up, and I came back fighting. And if he comes up with some big hits in October here, I think he is going to be a guy that the fans are going to gravitate towards here because I think, especially in the Bronx, in New York, in the Northeast here, we kind of root for the underdog a little bit. And it's almost like Anthony Volpe is kind of become a little bit of an underdog here with the way things have been handled this year.
One thing that that I've seen out of Volpe the most, that has been the most like glaring to me, that has really just stood out to me with maybe Rizzo has been working with some of these guys, I don't know. He reminds me a lot of Anthony Rizzo with two strikes this year. And in big situations, you're seeing a guy in Volpe that you wish you would see in Jazz Chisholm. He's been up there with two strikes, not all the time, but with two strikes, especially with runners in scoring position. And he's not defeated. He's going into the different mindset of I need to put this ball in play.
Well, look at that bad bat that he had yesterday.
Yeah, he's had good secondary swings. He's not getting beat. And he's just not trying to do too much, and you're seeing the results of that. And it's why I bring up Jazz here, because if Jazz could get into that mindset, and you've seen him do it here and there, but even when Jazz comes through when you need him to, it's still that big friggin' hips exploding, bat fully through, and just swing and pray to God you make contact type of swing.
I don't know if I've ever seen a guy have a longer swing in a big situation than Josh Chisholm.
Yeah, it's crazy to me that no one has said, dude, look, big situation, two strikes, choke up a little, shorten up, just put the ball in play. There is no situational awareness when it comes to Josh Chisholm at the plate. And there wasn't with Anthony Volpe for a while. And I think you're seeing a little bit more of a mature hitter up there. And it's done crazy big things for him in just a year.
Well, his at-bats are a lot better. Even if he doesn't get a hit, he's working counts a lot better. He's still going to chase that slider down in a way, and we saw that against the A's this weekend, but he's laid off a lot more of them than he has in the past. So I think he has the ability to have a good season this year. So if Anthony Volpe even if Anthony Volpe hits 240 and has an OPS in like around like 730 this year, I don't know how you wouldn't take that considering what the alternative is and, you know, what some of these other guys are doing. And then you just wait and see, like, if he's going to get the chance in October, okay. Let's see if he has another big October here because we know he has the ability to do it. He had the OPS was well over 800 in the World Series run, so we know he has the – that knack for the big moment. Yeah. So we'll see, man. I'm like I said, I'm not coming on here. I'm not saying that, oh, it's his job. He's the shortstop. I don't believe that at all. Even with how well he's played this year, but I think he has an opportunity here to earn more playing time.
We're looking at a guy that can positively contribute to this team right now.
And you didn't think you would be saying that last
year. And you
year.
Didn't think you'd be saying it. So the fact that we can means You gotta find more time for him.
And one guy the Yankees have found more time for, and I think this is due to a couple of different things. Obviously, the injuries to Jason Dominguez and Giancarlo Stanton, and the ineffectiveness of Spencer Jones when he was up here. When that's who we affectionately call Unc, Paul Goldschmidt, who's batting 261 with an 8.4 final this year. I like Paul Goldschmidt. When I said I didn't want to Goldschmidt to play, that's why I didn't want him back here. But I think Paul Goldschmidt in the elder statesman in the quote unk role is doing a really good job this year for the Yankees. It's just that I don't like now how since Cabbie's been back and they sent Jones down, because let's be honest, he didn't belong here. He's been playing every day, and I just don't think that's the best use of. And he's been hitting. Like, let's. I honestly like. I shouldn't be complaining too much, but I just don't think playing Goldschmidt every day, and especially every day against righties, is really like the best use of him. Because I think we are going to get the law of diminishing returns on Paul Goldschmidt. Because I think we saw it last year.
Yeah, but I mean, they're in a situation now where they're just trying to put out their best nine.
And obviously, he belongs there. But I think this. Really, what this is less about Paul Goldschmidt and what Paul Goldschmidt has done in the Yankees, more about what the Yankees need. And they need Giancarlo Stanton to get back. They need Jason Dominguez to get back. And they need to acquire another right-handed bat.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think eventually, just like we were talking about how maybe right now, the carousel of positions is fine as long as they have, some direction on honing that in as we get closer to October, fine. Same thing goes with Goldschmidt right now. They're just with some guys being hurt, trying to put out their best nine. I think Goldie has obviously earned that, that playing time that he's been getting. But you bring up, what they need to do at the deadline. So I figure now is a good time to segue, just to ask you this question real quick, because I'm very curious. Let's just assume every team gets one move they can make at the deadline, if any. And you're the GM of the Yankees. As of right now, June 1st, what's the one move that you make to solidify this team a little bit more?
The only reason why I'm a little scared about this is because he's got the hamate injury right now. But if he was healthy, it's Ryan Jeffers.
Really?
100%. A right-handed hitting catcher.
So you think the Yankees have enough to solidify the bullpen internally,
I
assuming
just don't
Weathers?
know. That's the thing, though. You go around and you look at the guys that could be available, and are the Yankees going to be in on any of them? I keep hearing Josh Hader. You think the Houston Astros are going to trade Josh Hader to the Yankees? I don't
No.
see that. I don't see that happening. And do you see? Okay, Aroldis Chapman could be available. You want to go down that road again? If the Red Sox would even trade him here?
Probably not.
Okay. I mean, I'm sure there's other guys. If I went around and looked, maybe there'd be closers available. But I
But
mean,
based on just not just so much of who's available, just what you think this team needs the
I think
most.
they need a
Do you
cool.
think Austin Wells is that bad that he
I think they are in desperate need of a right-handed, another right-handed hitter in this lineup.
Let me ask you this, because
They also need a closer.
I feel like I don't pay attention enough to the stat. How many runners has Wells thrown out this year?
I don't know. It doesn't seem like a lot.
We put this.
I also don't think that they're running on the Yankees a lot, because if you've noticed, the Yankees are running a lot more plays this year than they have in years previous.
Yeah, true. I just don't see where Wells's value. And you want to talk about the chemistry he has, with the starting rotation and so on and so forth. Fine, I'll buy into that, a little bit. But as far as just a catcher, like, yeah, he's good back there, but I don't think it's anywhere near enough to justify trotting him out there day in and day out the way he's been hitting at this point.
And that's the problem. It's like if he was hitting like 210 and his OPS was like 630, and with the way the Yankees pitching staff has been, okay, you're like, all right, you know what? I could live with that. But he's hitting 178. His OPS is 570. And I want to look this up because I wonder how actually bad it is.
He's had seven. He's caught seven base runners stealing. Which I don't think I watch every game. I feel like I haven't seen one of them.
His OPS plus is 62.
Jesus.
I
My
mean,
God.
you can't. I mean, that this is what you're looking at because when you have some of these other guys in this lineup performing the way that they performed, like you can't just say, "Oh, we'll carry the catcher."
Yeah, no. No.
So I mean, if Ryan Jeffers was healthy, I think that'd be a name that would be at the top of my list of guys that they should acquire. And he's gonna, even with the hamate injury, he's gonna have a lot of suitors because the Twins stink, and he's in a walk year, so it's not gonna be a big commitment. And I think they need a closer. I w honestly, like, I still have a lot of faith in David Bednar, maybe more than I probably should, because I don't think he's scared out there. But I think he would almost, if you backed him up, that might be better for the Yankees.
Maybe.
So, I mean, if you look around, this is kind of the last thing I want to touch on here before the end of the show here. Well, going back to the Paul Goldschmidt point here is that, okay, right now Goldschmidt deserves to be playing every day, and he should be playing every day based on the other guys that are hurt.
Ray's
And
coming back, by the way.
oh, great, of course they are.
Sorry.
They were down 6-0. What's the score
It's
now?
8-5 and threatening.
So you look at Goldschmidt, he should be playing every day when we take into account the injuries. And again, this is why still today we put so much stock in Giancarlo Stanton, because he's as durable as a wet paper bag. The guy's still a beast up there and a legitimate threat at the plate every time that he steps into the batter's box. And it lengthens his lineup out, where it's either now you can bat him fifth, now you're going, Christian Judge,
You're breaking up a bit.
Jason Dominguez, who's kind of was gaining a little bit of traction here before he ran into the wall. But the one thing that I'm really I'm really down on Goldschmidt playing every day is the fact that now Ben Rice has been relegated to being the DH. Well, is he your everyday first baseman? Is he the guy that you want to play first base for the next decade or not?
Right. That makes zero sense to me.
Because how are you developing him as a first baseman by relegating him to be a DH right
It
now?
makes zero sense to me. If you're going to play Goldschmidt every day, and this is a great point, why is Ben Rice the DH? Are you trying to preserve him? Are you trying to limit his chances of a physical injury playing the field? I think you're doing more harm than good. I think you're seeing a guy who clearly has put a lot of work in at first base, who has clearly looked way more comfortable and natural over there this year as opposed to last year.
Well, then the only argument for it is that if you do feel more comfortable with Goldschmidt in the ninth inning at first base, you can't DH him.
Fine.
Because if something happens and then you go into extra innings or whatever, then you don't have a DH.
Yeah, that's fine, but we're talking about, up to this point, April and May baseball. You're sacrificing Ben Rice's development as your future first baseman for April and May baseball as a defensive first baseman. It doesn't make a whole ton of sense to me. When you're talking
I mean,
about
that's the only
maybe
that's
when you're talking about the outfield, third base, late in games, fine. But to me, you're doing more harm than good. Not trotting Rice out at first base for a majority of the games.
You're not giving any credence to him, Ken. I hate that idea. Or would you?
Say that again, because you kind of broke up.
I said, are you giving any credence to him catching every day? Because I hate that idea.
I was kind of laying the foundation for this when I was talking about how Wells behind the plate just doesn't do enough for me to, like, argue he needs to be the catcher. I'll say this. I'm not going to fight for Ben Rice to be the catcher, but if the Yankees aren't going to go out and get a legitimate right-handed hitting catcher, then I'm okay with that. I am, because I'm telling you right now, this team, I don't think they can go into October with, unless Austin Wells is going to go off on a tear and, you know, hit 250 the rest of the year, at least, and have some power at the plate. I don't see how this lineup is deep enough, even when Stanton comes back, to continue to trot him out there every day. And if that's the move they have to make, I'm more okay with that than leaving Austin Wells there. Do I want them to go out and look for options and get a right? Yes, that would be my number one thing I'd want them to do. If they're not going to do that, I don't want to see Austin Wells, this version of Austin Wells, in an October lineup.
Well, I think what we need to ask is this question. Is Ben Rice, as we sit here on June 1st, the American League MVP? Everybody wants to talk about what Aaron Judge hasn't done this year and who's going to take it from him. You hear the names of Yordan Alvarez. You hear the name of Bobby Wood Jr. Okay, all viable candidates. Not saying that they're not. But is the guy the biggest threat to Aaron Judge's reign as MVP, his own teammate? Because right now, Ben Rice is hitting 306 with 17 home runs, 44 RBIs, and a 1055 OPS. And he's looked every bit of the best hitter on the New York Yankees. You can't really argue that he's not been their best hitter this year and that he's performed at an MVP level. So now, as we move through two full seasons of two full months of baseball, and we move into the summer months here, where people want to take this away from Aaron Judge, and rightfully so, because he has not been on that level. You hear the names. Is Ben Rice's name the name that you should be putting at the top of that list right now? Because for me, yeah, Bobby Wood Jr. is great. Yeah, Yordan Alvarez is great. But when you look at why the Yankees are the second best team in the American League, why they have scored the most runs in the American League, it's Ben Rice.
No doubt. It's no doubt. Do you like the construction of this lineup?
I hate the construction of this lineup.
I don't. Again, I'm not going to sit here and argue about anything negative right now. Yeah, the Yankees have gone through their ups and their downs, and now they're back up. So I'm not going to sit here and complain. I just don't really, the construction of this lineup doesn't make a whole ton of sense to me. Would you consider even touching Ben Rice at this point and maybe flip-flopping him to protect Judge until he gets into a groove?
What do you mean, or bat him third?
Or until Stanton comes back?
You want to bat him third?
I don't know. Maybe here's the argument you can make with age. Maybe it's not as easy as you get older to get through these tough stretches of, again, not so much a tough stretch, but like not clicking just yet. And it's been 2 months now. Does Judge deserve, because he's getting a little older here, to see if Ben Rice can be the catalyst, hitting behind him, seeing maybe some better pitches, and maybe jump-starting him? I know we always say Judge doesn't need that, Judge is Judge, whatever, but maybe that's where the age...
Yankees have hit Judge second a lot this year with Rice behind them.
Yeah, but lately it's been, I mean, it's been a while since that happened.
You know what the biggest problem for me right now is that they are not getting on base enough for Aaron Judge. And we talked, like, Aaron Judge was seventh, whatever it was, on the team with at bats and runners in scoring position, and Giancarlo Stanton was actually one of the guys ahead of him. There you have Aaron Judge, who's got the seventh most plate appearances with runners in scoring position. So how do you get more guys on base for Aaron Judge? And that's why you hate picking on Jazz Chisholm, or maybe you don't. I don't know. But that's why you look at a guy like Jazz Chisholm. It's like, if this guy knew what his skill set truly was, that's your leadoff hitter.
Well, to be fair, it's tough for Judge to come up with runners in scoring position when Ben Rice seems to clear the fucking bases every time he's up, man. I mean, even in that game yesterday, it felt like every time Ben Rice came up, it was just like clean slate.
So what do you do then? Do you toy with the idea of Bellinger maybe leading off?
Yeah, I would. I would. Well, Trent's been hitting a little better, you know? I don't know. I would. Bellinger hasn't, like...
Belly's so good in RBI.
He is. To me, I'm going to go back and, like, kind of argue against myself here just to bring this up. If we're really locking in on Judge here, my biggest concern with him, people think, like, he's not catching up to the fastball, whatever. You know what my biggest tell with Aaron Judge is? See if you can... What's the one thing, if you see Aaron Judge do this, or maybe not do this, that you're just like, oh, he's off?
I don't know. He's been hitting the ball on the ground a lot.
Well, for me, it's when I see pitchers hang sliders or curveball, sliders or curves.
Sliders. You know, David Cohn did that the other night.
Did he?
Yeah.
If he's not mashing them more times than not 500 feet, there's a problem. And more times than not this year, I'm seeing more and more sliders in the zone that Aaron Judge, when he's on, demolishes, and he's just not. And it's not like Aaron Judge has seen bad pitches. I mean, it's not like guys aren't going after him right now. So I don't know. I mean, that's, for anyone listening, that's my biggest tell. When you start to see Aaron Judge take fastballs up the middle, opposite field, and then absolutely demolish off-speed pitches that hang, that's when you know he's back.
I thought he had that one the other night, too.
Yeah, he's just missing. He's just missing.
Well, to be fair, I mean, that's long gone at Yankee Stadium. He hit that three. I mean, he hit that 100 miles an hour, 370 feet. That's a...
Yeah.
But I thought he had it more than enough to even get it out over there.
Yeah.
So you think he's cooked, is what you're saying?
No. I just think it's not all there just yet.
I mean, but he can't be a 240 hitter for this team. He's got to get going.
He won't be. I don't think he's going to hit 300 this year, but I certainly don't think he's going to sit in the 240s, 250s. I think he'll end around 275, 280.
But if it's 270 with 50 bombs and 100 driven in, I don't think anybody's really going to care too much.
I'll be honest with you. The biggest stat that, out of all the stats I used to fight, OPS and OPS Plus are such a big tell. They're really good stats. And for Aaron, for me, we know what we're going to get power-wise with Aaron Judge, even on a down year. For me, it's the OPS. And I know it's a lot to say, and I know it's unfair. But until Aaron Judge's OPS is over 1,000, he's not fully Aaron Judge. I mean, what did he end with last year? 12-something?
His OPS last year was 1144.
Yeah, I mean, that's insane. It's insane. But, and again, maybe it doesn't get up there. Maybe
Chris,
it doesn't get...
Like, he's the worst hitter in the entire world. He's 53.
You're breaking
his
up.
His OPS plus is 153.
What's his OPS plus? 153? Jesus, God. We're spoiled.
I mean, but when you're this good, when you're as good as he's been, and
you're
not...
going to have a magnifying glass on you, man.
PS Plus is not starting with a 2 when it's done, which it's been the 3 of the last 4 years. People are going to start questioning. Again, like I said, I'm not there, man. And you know what? Tomorrow would be a hell, or later today, as you listen, would be a hell of a day for Aaron Judge to get it going, because the Yankees are going to start a series against the Cleveland Guardians here, 3 games, 7:05. Cam Schlittler back on the mound on Tuesday for the Yankees against Joey Cantillo, and then you're going to see Gerrit Cole on Wednesday, 7:05 against Gavin Williams. So, you know, you're thinking those are going to be easy dubs for the Yanks with Cole and Schlittler, but you know, Cantillo and Williams are pretty good pitchers in their own right. And then you're going to see Slade Ciccone, who the Yankees should be able to score some runs off of against Carlos Rodon. But hey, you know what? It's an AL Central team, bro.
Just go out there and get the job done.
Yes, and
The AL Central only exists for one reason. To just rack up the wins.
get the Yankees hot.
Yeah, come on.
So this is the final season of NYYST. That's why Chris is making appearances every 8 weeks. So we'd love if you joined us every single week here on the show. So subscribe on the very podcast platform you're listening to us on right now. We also love it if you left us a 5-star rating and review. Give us a little love here as we exit stage left. We're in June already, man. The first 2 months of the final season are already gone here. Going to be over before we know it here, so please leave us a 5-star rating or review. And whether or not you want to continue to tell people, we still appreciate it if you did. We are the official Yankee podcast of Odyssey. We'd also love it if you followed or subscribe to NYY Underground on YouTube. My other show, The Bronx or Nowhere, will be back this Thursday live after the Yankees complete their series with Cleveland at 8:30. So check that out. And yeah, that's all the bookkeeping, right?
That's it, man.
All right. So we love you guys so much, and we appreciate all your support here in the final season of NYYST. This has been episode 529. Thank you so much for listening. Chris, say goodbye.
Peace.